Hello?
Blog Talk Radio.
I've got to call you through the chat, the line. It's probably a 213 number or a 646 number. I just called a couple of times, but it went to your voicemail. Okay, so I'm going to call now. Okay. Well, good evening and welcome to The Man's Voice. I want to welcome everyone to the show. And as we go into tonight's topics and discussion, if you want to join in with us, feel free calling us at 646-668-8740. One of the things that happened during the week that we all are a little amiss about is the passing of Muhammad Ali. And I wanted to just go through the panel here and talk about the different thoughts that they might have on this. So why don't we start with Mr. Wiggins? I know that you might have some conversation you want to talk about on this. Please go ahead.
Okay. You're talking about my hero, David. And what I mean by a hero, I remember being a young Negro boy in 1963-64, growing up in Michigan, where there was riots, the Detroit riots was going on, social identity. I didn't know what I wanted to do in life. I was in junior high school, and the Vietnam War was going on, race riots. I needed to find my purpose. And I didn't know what I wanted to do, but I convinced my parents to let me stay up and listen to the fight. So I got a transistor radio, and I don't know if many of you can remember those. Here we are. Technology is so savvy now. Technology had transistor radios. I had to go out and get me a 8-volt battery. Brand new, so it wouldn't go out, so I could listen to the fight. And he was going to be fighting the heavyweight champion of the world, Sonny Liston, and I had to listen that night so I could convince my parents to let me stay up. And I heard that broadcast. I heard Don Duff, one of my favorite announcers, talking about the fight. And Muhammad Ali had been bragging. And he was full of confidence, but back in those days, if you talk too much, they would call it bragging. But he was a man that would say what he wanted to do and do it.
Okay, can you call in?
And it told me if I believe what I say, I can achieve what I say. It gave me confidence. And he fought Sonny Liston. And that they swore would beat him. He won the fight. And man, that was such an exciting moment in my life for a person to speak something that they wanted to do and actually do it. And then the war came. And here name. I mean, change his name. Actually said, I don't want to be that guy anymore. I'm going to be this guy. His religious conviction, and a person has a right to their own religious conviction. And he even said, I'm willing to die for my religion.
All right.
I'm willing to die for it.
All right. Any other comments? What about you, Frank? Any thoughts on this?
I just wanted to comment that the other day on Facebook, one of the retired sailors that I know sent me a Facebook post whereby Muhammad Ali, the humanitarian that he is, the worldwide humanitarian, would happen to be in Qatar during Ramadan, which is a Muslim holiday. And they knew he was at a hotel, so they sent one of the officers to tell Muhammad Ali that they were hosting a dinner for the U.S. ambassador and that he was invited to attend. They never talked to him personally. Well, he showed up, and when he showed up to the ship, he begged off of going into the wardroom, which is the officer portion of the ship where they eat, and said instead he wanted to be with the enlisted people in the crew's mess, whereby he entertained them with jokes, picture taking, and magic tricks. So they still have those pictures of him, which I've now saved because it was posted on Facebook. And I find in my life, like previously said, that for me he was an inspiration because he was convicted. His convictions were what he believed in. He stood up to the government and stood up to the system that we had in place and overcame that successfully. And he had to pay a sacrifice a little bit because he missed 3 years of boxing. One other story that I want to share with you is that my doctor, physician, told me that when he was a student in Manila, and when they were doing the thriller in Manila, he happened to be walking the street, and this limousine drove up on the curb, blocked him off, and in Ali fashion, he recognized this guy as an American. It was pretty easy because the physician is Caucasian, and he told Ali told him that Bogey and the physician student stood out, and we've got to stick together. We're the only ones here. So that memory also touches my position to this day. And Ali has had a lot of encounters like that worldwide, highly respected, will be missed, a role model and an example of a human being that has overcome. He had dyslexia, so that was one of his handicaps that he had, but he overcame that, and he overcame that by being able to memorize things such as rhymes that he had. So we will miss him.
Yes, we will. And I want to extend for the man's voice and all of us here, if I can be so bold as to say that we are, our prayers and everything goes out to the family, friends, and all those who loved him, which I'm sure is a large number of people throughout the United States. But I want to move on into the show. We'll, talk a little bit about this again later, but I want to move into the show. And on the phone, I have a person who's calling in to be on our show. So he's a guest for us. His name is Mossad Mohammed. He is Muslim. And what I want to do is talk about religion. That is something that usually people stay away from, but this is the man show, and we are going to talk about things that people find difficult to talk about. We've done a lot of politics. We've done a lot of things that we think men should talk about. But one of the things that seems going on in the United States is a lot of talk about the Muslim community, Muslim religion. And Mr. Muhammad, are you on the line there?
I am.
Welcome. I want to start off with a little bit about I have a question in the religion, the Muslim religion versus Christianity. I know that in the Christian religion, there is and there's a lot of discussion on God and Jesus Christ. Some people think that God and Jesus Christ are one, and some people think that Jesus Christ was the Son of God. In the Muslim religion, is Allah God, the supreme being, or is Allah a son of the supreme being, or how would we define Allah?
Okay, according to Islam, the Islamic belief, Allah is the Arabic word, which actually means the God. So, according to Islam, we believe Allah is the Creator.
All right. If you could just speak a little louder for us, we're getting you're very low. But if you could speak a little louder, okay. So, Allah is the God. I got that. So, okay, panel, do you have any questions for? And I want to say I'm very impressed with I ran across Mr. Muhammad. He's actually a self-sustaining person. He basically eats what he grows and is a farm and very into nature. and making things happen for himself. So do you have any questions for Mr. Wiggins? Do you have any questions for Mr. Muhammad?
Yes, Mr. Muhammad, you believe in the Quran. I assume so, being of the Muslim persuasion. The Quran has a lot of the Old Testament of the Bible. Do you believe in the Old Testament of the Bible?
Yes, I believe that. I guess the Islamic belief is that the Bible was originally sent from God, but over time it became changed. So I believe that the Word of God is in the Old Testament, definitely. But I believe some of it has been changed.
Okay. Any other questions? Frank, do you have any questions for Mr. Muhammad?
Yes. Can you hear me?
Yeah, we can hear you.
Yeah. The Bible, part of the Bible is part of the Quran, the most holiest book.
Hold on a second, Frank. I think you got a duplicate voice. You got a lot of background coming in. You got an echo going on there.
I'll state that again.
There we go.
The Bible is contained in the Quran. Is that true?
No, I would disagree with that.
Okay. Jesus is considered a prophet in the Quran.
Correct.
Right. And we are all descendants of Abraham.
Right.
According to, right?
Okay. I believe that as well, yes.
Yes.
Okay.
Do you have any questions about Christianity?
I guess not right off the top of my head. I can't say I got any immediate questions.
Okay. What about you, Ron? Do you have any questions?
Yes, I do. This may be ignorance on my part, but I'm not quite sure that I understand the difference between Muslims and Islam. Is there somebody who can explain that to me?
The difference between Muslim and Islam?
Yes.
Okay. The name of the religion is Islam, which means submission to the will of God. One who in Arabic, one who submits to the will of God is a Muslim. So a Muslim is one who follows Islam.
Okay.
Does
that answer your question, Ron?
I'm having a hard time hearing the guest. I don't know if anybody else is or if it's just me. But I mean, I hear it, but it's kind of like broken.
You might want to go through your phone. I think we're all finding that we're having some technical issues, but we're going through our phone. Are you on your phone, Ron? Oh, you're on your computer. Okay, good. So I think that we have asked a lot of questions. My question to Mr. Muhammad, there's been a lot of comments in this last election about Muslims and the United States, and how are you feeling? What does that mean to you as a practicing Muslim on all the rhetoric that's going on about people who are of the Muslim religion in the United States through this election time? How do you feel about what's going on?
I don't know. I got a lot of mixed feelings, but overall I would say I'm hopeful that, you know, the relationships between Muslim Americans and Americans will improve, and that, you know, the Americans will come to realize that Muslims are not, you know, that Islam is a peaceful religion, and that, you know, we are not here to cause problems. We just want to live our life peaceful and try to worship God the best way we know how.
I know that you grew up and you are a farmer. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. Your circle, when you are going to pray, you go to the mosque. Is there a large population of Muslims in the area where you live?
Yeah, there's a considerable number. I'd say there's probably a couple thousand.
Okay. There has been a lot of comments through the election period that said one of the candidates wanted to stop Muslims from coming to the United States. How did you take that? How did you feel about that?
Can you repeat that?
Yes, one of the candidates said that if he was elected president of the United States, he would do something to stop the flow of Muslims into the United States until they have passed some kind of credibility or something. And how did you feel when you heard that?
I guess that kind of makes me feel a little fearful. Yes, maybe, religious discrimination. Islam, of course, is really misunderstood right now, but mainstream Islam is, not a religion. It doesn't support terror or approve of terror, and, we are also being terrorized just as much as everybody else, from both ends, from the terrorists and from everybody else who are confusing us with the terrorists.
So you are actually a citizen that has your farm, doing farm work and those kinds of things, and very credible on a daily basis. Have you ever been mistaken for a terrorist or anything as you go about your work?
There's been an incident or two, but I think overall I've been pretty lucky. But, some of my friends haven't been so lucky. But on one incident, I had a bunch of cops around me and, wanted my ID and told me I looked like a known terrorist and that was wanted in the area, which I knew was not true. I felt quite harassed over that.
Wow.
I think that was all based on my appearance, but yeah.
Wow. I see some of our panelists have questions. Don, you look like you have a question on your face there.
Yes. Let me ask Mr. Muhammad. Are you familiar with Dearborn, Michigan?
Yes.
Have you ever been to Dearborn, Michigan?
Yes, I have.
It has the highest concentration of Muslims in the United States. Is that right?
Of Arab Muslims, anyways, yeah.
What is the difference between a Muslim and a black Muslim?
From my understanding, the black Muslim group is more of a nationalistic group. Islam is a worldwide religion. I mean, it's open to every. We believe in that. Every man is a brother, no matter what color or creed. But I think the black Islam is mainly geared toward, for African Americans. I think it's more of a nationalistic. But for Islam, it's not. It's to everybody.
What was Muhammad Ali? A Muslim or a black Muslim?
I think he was Muslim.
He was Muslim?
Yeah.
What was Elijah Muhammad?
Elijah Muhammad was black. He is, to my understanding, the founder of that religion.
If we were to look at the current election today, would you vote for Donald Trump?
I don't know if that's a fair question there, Mr.
I don't know.
Hey, this is a man's point of view. This is a man's talk show, right?
Okay.
I don't think I would. But.
Why wouldn't you?
Well, I guess from what I've seen, he doesn't seem to be real open-minded towards other races and cultures. I felt that it could be dangerous, in that regard.
All right. I think we're having some technical difficulties, but I took it down to Mr. Wiggins. That's your phone. I think you have a couple of phones open there. I think it's on your line. But Mr. Cooper, Bruce, are you on the line?
I'm not sure. Am I?
Yes, you are, sir. You're on the on the line quite well. Do you have any questions for Muhammad?
Hello?
Pardon me?
Am I echoing at all?
No, you're not.
All right. Mr. Muhammad, how are you, sir?
Good. How are you?
I am just fine. I heard somebody talk about at least one of the closest places for me. I'm in Michigan, and I've worked for a number of years with a number of administrations and a lot of people in Dearborn. So my education on the whole Islamic interaction and communication is limited, like yours is in certain regards, and all of ours are. But my question to you would be a very simple one. If you and I got a chance to sit across the table and sip a cup or whatever your favorite beverage is, I would probably ask you, since you said, you know, we both believe, I'm a Christian, we both believe in God in our own way, we both believe in following the word in our own way. So I would really get to the point of, let's find out, and I would think we have a lot more things in similarity, a lot more things in common than we do in differences. And what I keep hearing and seeing, and correct me if I'm wrong if you see it different, is too much posturing on my side, too much posturing on your side, meaning the two religions, and not near enough dialogue where we just sit down and talk to each other. And communication, as I know you would agree, is the clarity, the common factor that seems to clarify so many things, and we just don't seem to do that. We automatically assume, and you and I and our listeners know what assume means.
Right.
So how would you respond to that, Mr. Muhammad?
I guess I would agree with you totally. I think the more that we communicate with each other and explain the, you know, the questions or the things that we don't understand about each other to each other, the better relationship that we'll have. I see it happening, you know, even with people that I meet and, you know, talk to, and they ask questions and they leave, I feel, or hope that they leave understanding and having a better opinion of Islam and Muslims. You know.
Well, I would guarantee you, if it were you and I and we did that, if you have that conversation with an open mind, although we would probably find a number of things we disagree on, that's life. I mean, we're
right.
Different cultures and so forth, and I would like to think we'd learn from each other. And
right.
And this posturing, all it does is beget fear and ignorance, and fear and ignorance begets actions that none of us like on both sides.
Right. I agree.
So,
So
until we decide. And along those lines, and you could counter to me, along those lines, the thing I keep hearing, and tell me if my thought is wrong, is I hear people say, well, why doesn't the Muslim faith or the Muslim group come out and condone certain things, or condone it enough that the general public sees that and gets to understand the Muslim religion better? Do you see that happening or not?
I think that I have also had other friends tell me that, as far as, like, you know, on the terrorism thing, why don't you hear more Muslim clerics out, you know,
right,
against it and so forth. I think they are. I mean, you know, if you go to services, they are, but obviously it's probably mostly Muslims that are going to Muslim services. We probably need to definitely get out there more and let other people know. But I think we're trying to. It's definitely something we need to work on.
That's admirable, and all I could say to improve on that is stand on a higher podium or shout a little louder so the rest of us can hear that.
Okay.
Mr. Muhammad, let me ask you a question. What is one thing that you would say that most Americans are not correct in thinking about the Muslim community? What would you say if you would just know this, you would know it's better. What would you tell me?
Oh, that's kind of hard to summarize down, I guess. But I would say that Islam is really a religion of peace. It's never been successful or been good in times of war, but in times of peace, it's always been a very fast spreading religion. And from the very beginning, it always spread in times of peace. And I think that people misunderstand Islam as being more of a harsh religion that imposes itself on others. And if you really understand the scriptures, it's not. It's the reverse of that.
I guess a lot of Americans would say that there are then Muslims in other countries who are not following the scriptures. They are ISIS, for example. There's something in the paper today about them killing their own people because they think they're spies amongst them. How should Americans feel about Muslims in the United States versus those that are doing all these things? And I don't know what to ask you. I don't know how you feel about the Muslims that are doing all this bad stuff in other people's countries. And I want to make sure that everyone understands you're from Somalia, right?
Yeah, originally. Yeah.
And so how do you feel about those people that are doing all these things that are that have people on edge when they meet you? And how do you, I guess, the back to that question is, how do you feel when people kind of give you that, you get that feeling that there's something wrong? Is there something that you do to try to explain that? I mean, I don't think it's necessary, but is there?
Well, I just try to be upfront and, you know, try to be friendly and let them know that I'm just a normal person like everybody else. As far as the terrorists, this ISIS group and all this, you know, it's unfortunate, you know, that I feel like they're malpracticing Islam, you know. That's not Islam at all. If you understood Islam or even read the Quran, it's the opposite of what Islam teaches.
Okay.
I mean, there's multiple scriptures in Islam that tell you that there's no compulsion in religion. You know, it's supposed to be free. You know, it's something you do, your surrender, a free surrender from your heart to God, and, you know, nobody can force you to do it.
Right. All right. Any other questions? Ron, do you have any questions?
Not a question, but more of a comment. And, you know, obviously we all know there's good people and bad people in all religions. You know, Christianity, I mean, there's good people, there's bad people. That's just a given. That's human nature. But what I'm very disappointed and actually kind of disgusted is the fact that one of the presidential candidates, Donald Trump, has said repeatedly that he wants surveillance of Muslims living in this country, if I'm not mistaken. And yet, look at the number of Americans, including some very reputable, well-established Republicans, that are standing behind a man that says such a thing. I mean, are we like turning the clock back 20, 30, 40 years in terms of racism and, you know, just being what this country is all about? You know, people of all different nationalities and ethnicities coming together and making this country great. I mean, it's not just the comment that he made about the surveillance, but, you know, the building of the wall between the U.S. and Mexico. I mean, it seems to me that we're going backwards. And I just, you know, I'm afraid what will happen if he does get elected.
Mr. Muhammad, what do you think about that?
I would agree. I would feel nervous about, you know, what would happen if he would get elected. Also, women, you know, like how he's talked down about women and, you know, Islam is very protective of women. And, you know, they deserve to have rights. And treated, you know, equal. And to me, he doesn't seem to see women as equal with men, or, you know, having rights, or any minorities. I definitely agree that, you know, it seemed like it would really be dangerous for the country if he would get in control.
Do you feel that it would be extremely dangerous for your community? Or your community?
Yeah, I do, but I also, you know, in this country, majority of the Muslims in this country are American-born. So I'm hoping that, you know, is he going to go against the Americans? It's still American people. These are American citizens that live here.
Okay. Frank, do you have any comments you want to make? We're not hearing you, Frank. I don't know what happened. Okay.
I'm sorry.
There you go.
I'm sorry. Mr. Mohammed, I don't want you to fill this with the facts, but you said as a Muslim that you are kind of going soft on exerting your true feelings based on the fact that you're not in a native country.
How's that? Could you repeat that?
That you're really not saying what you really feel, because this is not your native country.
It's not my native country, but I mean, I consider myself to be American. You know, I'm an American citizen. You know, this is my country.
Yeah, but don't you feel that you're? Don't you feel upset when someone takes off a hijab from a Muslim woman?
Yeah, but I also understand that it comes from ignorance, because they don't understand what hijab, what it means, you know, and it's just something different. They're not used to it, so they're picking on them.
Well, my question is do you think this is going to resolve itself by being a nice guy and not speaking up more about the situation? And being demonstrative in that, and that you shouldn't conduct yourself, you know, that the people that do that should not conduct themselves that way. And do you speak up loudly about that?
You mean speaking up as far as if somebody is mistreating?
Yeah, mistreating, calling out, using terms that would be bigoted terms that would indicate bigotry against a certain population of people because they look different.
I would definitely speak out.
Because Mr. Muhammad, you are a married man, right?
Yes.
And your wife wears the Somali attire, right? Which is almost like hijab, right? Yes, yes. So I guess the question would be: does she get respect when she is? I know your mother was a instructor, a teacher here in the United States, and she wore her clothes to school. Did they get a lot of respect, or was there ever a time when you had to get really upset at people for the way they were reacting to your wife or your mother?
I personally have not had any negative experiences in that regard. Pretty much everybody seems to be very respectful.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Mr. Wiggins. Go ahead, Frank.
One of the things I wanted to point out is the Muslims have nationally went on record as condemning the violence in France and elsewhere that's been caused by radicals. We've had in our local paper in Virginia, in the Hampton Roads area, Richmond has done it. Washington, D.C. has, I think it's called Ellis, which is a coalition of Muslim up in Northern Virginia. And they've all went on record and published at their expense and other people's expense, other religious organizations' expense, on the record to indicate that that's condemned. One of the concerns, I guess, is what we're concerned about, Mr. Muhammad, is that the children being radicalized.
Uh-huh.
And whether or not the imams in the temple are speaking to them.
Yes, that is definitely a concern with us, and that we are, you know, definitely trying to make sure that our children understand, you know, the correct religion of Islam, you know, and that are not confused with what we would consider to be an Islamic cult. And that's definitely very important to us.
All right.
That's all I have.
Bruce, do you have any questions?
Well, I was going to ask, as I've been listening, I was going to ask Mr. Muhammad, do you feel a little bit like we're ganging up on you, or that we're just super curious?
No, I don't feel ganged up on at all. Yeah, I feel curious.
Good. I still go back to the fact that we're just on both sides, or whatever sides you want to label, that we are not talking to each other enough.
Right.
We're assuming too many things. We assume maybe too many terrorist activity are associated with the Islamic nation, and some obviously is, some is not. And on the other side, certain groups are responsible for this and that. But indeed, you start seeing more and more, or another conclusion you can get is when you see a number of violent things going on in this country right now, you wonder how many are really fighting for a cause or just out there to fight because they've kind of got an excuse that hands off or at a distance, and we can do whatever we want. They feel somewhat empowered in the wrong way. What would you think about that?
As far as what do I think is basically the cause of these terrorist cells?
No. Do you think in any way that some of this violence that we're experiencing in the U.S. right now is just without the purpose that a lot of people say it is, that it's just an excuse to do something that isn't the greatest thing in the world to do, whereas, you know, if there's a lot of misunderstanding, and as you said earlier, and I agree, ignorance or fear, I don't see anybody standing up, jumping up and down and say, wait a minute, ladies and gentlemen, let's sit down and really try and get a solution to this instead of, you know, going to the streets and having all kinds of problems there. Do you feel that, I mean, why can't action be more positive than negative?
I don't know. I think, like you say, I think it's a lot of fear on both sides. You know, if you get up there and try to tell everybody that, you know, this is not what's going on in the media, or, you know, this ISIS group is not true Islam, you know, people are going to look at you like, you know, they don't believe you. You know, you call yourself Muslim and they call themselves Muslim. You look like them. That, you know, you guys dress alike, and you know they're claiming one thing and you're claiming the other thing. Sometimes that, personally, anyways, I feel a little bit intimidated
right. Because
of that.
Okay. One of the things I want to make sure that I asked Mr. Muhammad to come on in for about 15 minutes, and we've already had him on here for almost 40 minutes. But I wanted to say that one of the things is this matter is necessary for us as fathers to take in our hands and teach our children, you know, that the right way, and, you know, that everyone is equal no matter what their religion is. I mean, we all are worshiping God. And so I think for the man's voice, I would say our voice would be, we need to make those statements to the world about how this is not going to stand for us. We can't tolerate this anymore, that everyone is good unless they prove themselves otherwise, and quit using what you wear, what you look like, as something to say that, you know, that doesn't fit here in the United States. Can I get somebody to back me up on that? What about you? I see Mr. Wiggins.
Yes, I have a question I'd like to ask Mr. Muhammad.
Sure.
Mr. Muhammad, we've been in wars ever since Isaac and Ishmael. fighting wars, disagreeing on religion. Here it is, 2016. I don't know how long you've been of the Islamic faith, but what are you doing to bridge the gap between you and the Jewish population?
Between me and the Jewish population? I actually have a Jewish friend that, you know, I correspond with regularly. And he's actually asked me to come speak one time at one of the synagogues, you know, on Islamic relations as well. I don't know. There's some, I guess we're trying to get some collaboration going between the two groups, because also our dietary beliefs is very similar. So there's even some Muslim Jewish farms that are combined, raising, you know, halal and kosher meat, and you know, I guess we're trying, but it's a big job, you know.
All right.
What is it?
Okay, Mr. Wiggins.
What
go
is
ahead.
It? Go ahead.
No, go ahead, Mr. Wiggins. Go ahead.
What do you think it's going to take to bridge the gap? Because this war has been going on for a long time, and I don't know how long you've been a Muslim.
I was born into a Muslim family.
Okay.
30 years old, so.
So your granddaddy's been fighting the same fight, right?
Well, I guess you could say that.
When will it end?
I don't know. God only knows. But, hopefully, if we definitely do our part and, you know, reason with each other and explain, sit down and explain to each other, you know, work out our differences, I think it would definitely be a lot sooner.
All right.
What can we do?
Do you think the situation is going to allow itself to end given the current state of Israel with the split of the Muslims and the Israelis?
I don't know. That's God alone knows the answer to that. Yeah, that's a hard question.
Well, what do you think some of the reasoning that ISIS exists?
I think that ISIS, along with all the other, you know, Al-Qaeda, these other groups, all are a product of Muslims misunderstanding or drifting away from Islam and not understanding Islam and misinterpreting the scriptures.
All right.
Yeah.
Go ahead. Frank. One more.
I guess my question to that is that, you know, they're fighting, and people generally fight because they believe they're not being treated fairly. Is that what you would think?
Right. Yeah. Well, I do think that the Muslim, you know, Muslims, a lot of Muslims feel that, you know, their voice is not being heard, because people are already assuming them to be terrorists, so whatever they have to say is blank, you know. So I do think that some of the, like you were saying about the young people, some of the young people may, you know, have been drawn to a group like that because of feeling isolated and not being heard or feeling depressed. And then if they don't truly understand Islam, you know, that maybe that would, they would feel like it was some kind of freedom fighting type thing. But obviously we're trying to make it clear to the young people that this is not Islam at all.
Yeah. All right. I think we've exhausted our time with Mr. Muhammad. He's been on now for like 45 minutes, and he was 15 minutes, hopefully 15 minutes. But we'd like to thank him. I think we should bring him back one more, you know, sometime soon down the line to go through some more question and answers, and I'm sure he'll think of a lot of things for us. We'd like to say thank you for being on, Mr. Muhammad. Goodness to you and your family. and we'll
thanks for having
you
me.
Go. Well, thank you. We appreciate you coming on board. On behalf of the Men's Voice, we'll talk to you again sometime soon.
Okay.
All right. Thank you. I want to get into, with the panel, the question that's been moving around everybody's thinking, and it's, of course, the gorilla piece. Harambe and the little boy that fell into the cage or where the gorilla was. And there's some, there is a notice from in the mail today or on the news today saying that they're looking at bringing charges against the family, but they will come up with that sometime next week. Do you think the family, to the panel, do you think family should be charged? Do you think this was bad parenting? What do you think is going on? Ron, you came from the zoo world. What do you think?
Yeah, as an animal lover and working at the zoo down here for 13 years, I was repulsed. You know, I understood what happened and why it had to happen, but it's a shame that such a beautiful creature, you know, and I don't know how many people know this, but Western lowland gorillas, there's very, very few left in the wild, and they're rapidly disappearing. And so, yes, I think that charges, I think there should be an investigation. And the one question that I haven't heard asked or answered, obviously, is what was the mother doing if she wasn't paying attention to what her son was doing? I mean, because it would take several, at least 30 seconds, if not longer, to climb over the fence, go through the hedges, and then go over the side 15 feet down into the moat. What was the mother doing? I mean, has anybody asked that question? I haven't heard that question.
I saw a dossier from the press that said, and it went through, there was a lady standing next filming. She had her camera out, and she was filming the whole thing, and you can hear the mother arguing with the boy who told the mother he was going to climb over the thing, and she's arguing with him, no, you can't, and he's saying, I'm going to do it anyway. So I, you know, I'm curious why that happened. Is it because
the mother was engaged with the other child, with the other,
yeah.
That's the problem, and she just didn't take the time, I don't think, to focus in on that one child. That was the original report. But for me, the whole situation needs to be examined, because what happened is we killed this creature that is most like us as human beings. There's only a small difference between us, our DNA, and the gorilla's DNA. And the other issue is, of course, the gorilla's continued. And we didn't protect the gorilla from ourselves. I don't want a Monday morning quarterback, but the gorilla is caged. That's the issue, being caged. And two is, we did not protect the gorilla from ourselves.
Right. What about you, Bruce? What do you think? Do you think, the question is, do you think the parents should, they are responsible, but do you think that they should be a criminal investigation put out and the parents should be somehow charged with anything? I don't know what they would be charged with.
I am. They don't really even know that at this point. I would tend to, I would agree with Harold in the regard of not only do we have to protect ourselves from the animals, we have to do it both ways. And if there's some, I hate to call it a criminal investigation, but if there's an investigation or research done, whatever, which I agree should be done, it should be to try and find out who did what wrong and how do we stop it from happening or minimize it. You'll never stop things. Minimize it from happening again. How do we improve the situation enough to really rectify something if it's a serious problem? And that could come in the form of a parent not properly supervising their child. It could be partly because of the physical construction of the cage. It could be a number of things. And that investigation or research could then determine who does what and how it's implemented. Now, you know, to try and say, well, it's all one person's fault or another, is wrong. And I've heard people say, well, they could have somehow saved that very special God's creature. But, you know, there was also, I know you guys have heard it, that one of the biggest fears was if you tranquilize him and you miss, or it's not effective enough, there's also an excellent chance he could get extremely angry and do some things that, quote, unquote, normally he would not do. So, you know, it's like everything else. Is you have to depend on those closest to the behavior of those animals as to what should be done, that they know what to do.
Ron, let me ask you, because you work in the zoo world, do you see the, because there were some questions about the gorilla was saving or wasn't hurting the kid, he was just protecting it. When you, what do you think?
I agree totally with that from the video that I've seen. And actually, Ron McGill, who is the spokesperson for the zoo down here, where the gorilla was actually on loan from Zoo Miami to the Cincinnati Zoo, has gone on TV, and so has Mr. Corwin. You know, the gorilla was actually trying to protect the little kid. And but that's not to say that, you know, a 400-pound gorilla like that, you know, when he or she gets agitated, you know, even though they're trying to protect the kid, they can still get kind of rough. You know, like you saw him dragging the kid through the water. I mean, that was probably just to take him someplace else, but, you know, that could harm the kid or even kill the kid. So, but, you know, speaking of the enclosure, you know, because the zoos don't use cages anymore. They're enclosures, and they do have a moat around the enclosures. That Cincinnati Zoo has been around for decades. And, you know, to my knowledge, nothing like this has ever happened in the gorilla exhibit at Cincinnati Zoo. I don't know if, you know, those of you that have been living in South Florida in the past have ever been to the zoo down here, but it's the same kind of setup. You know, there's a big moat in between the living area of the animals and where the people are. So, you know, it's just a bad situation that the kid happened to get into where he was not supposed to. And had the parents or other people around there been paying closer attention, this wouldn't have happened. And you know, the gorilla would still be with us today, and we wouldn't be talking about this.
Ron, let me ask you a question. It's something that is in my mind. When animals go to the zoo, we always see pictures of the caretakers taking care of the animals, and they kind of have a relation. Is that something they don't do? Because I thought the monkeys and gorillas and everything, that they did kind of have a relationship with the caregivers. Wasn't there a caregiver or something that could have stepped in? Or is that doesn't happen? Because I know they're in the wild, so I think, is it that they should always stay wild? And it was, would we consider this gorilla wild? I mean, yes, but...
The answer to that is yes. All the animals in a zoo are wild, and so obviously there are some animals that zookeepers develop a closer bond with, but gorillas is definitely not one of them.
Okay.
Because they, you know, they are very large and very powerful, and, you know, same thing as like orangutans, for example. We had an incident down here at the zoo where the veterinarian who was on the other side of a cage, you know, with metal and everything, her arm got pulled into the cage by the orangutan and snapped in three different places, you know. So these are wild animals, and they're in the zoo to educate especially young people about, you know, the plight of some of these animals around the world. But, you know, they're not tame. And nobody could go to the zoo thinking that they're going to be able to go and pet a chimpanzee like if it was her dog or cat.
Okay. So my understanding, the Miami Zoo put out a notice saying that they agreed with the procedures that were taking place and that the gorilla should have been shot. And so you're telling me that this gorilla was on loan from the Miami Zoo to Cincinnati Zoo?
There's loan programs between zoos, and usually they're for breeding purposes, or you know, for a number of reasons, but a lot of times it's for breeding purposes. And so this one was on loan from Zoo Miami to Cincinnati Zoo. That's right.
I guess my question, do you think this is bad parenting?
I don't think the zoo did anything wrong. So the answer to your question is, I'm not, you know, I wasn't there, so I don't know if it's bad parenting. You know, accidents happen. People make mistakes. But I'd like to know if, you know, how long the mother was not paying attention so that this was able to happen. You know, that's what I'd like to know.
Looks like it should have been a while. Bruce, what do you think?
I agree with what Ron said. That's trying to discover really all the factors involved and come up with, maybe it's a multiple type of solution, maybe it's something that's singular and more simple. We don't know that at this point. And I hearken back to the trainer that had worked with chimpanzees all her life that literally got her face ripped off, if you remember that, several years ago, from a chimpanzee. Now, we can say it was certain random acts by a wild animal that you can't domesticate. But in reality, it might be, as we were alluding to with the gorilla, certain modes that are triggered in their natural way of either protecting or fighting or fleeing that get triggered when we do something. I wouldn't profess to know all the reasons why a large chimpanzee or a gorilla behave the way they are, and we may be triggering something out of innocence that we have no idea what the reaction is going to be, but that animal knows exactly what they see it as and act accordingly. So I think there's a lot of situations where maybe even to this day we don't know enough about some of these animals.
All right. One of the notices that the zoo, the Society of the United States, put out is, remember that the zoo is not your babysitters. Those are wild animals running around, and you need to be in charge of your family and your kids. What do you think, Mr. Wiggins? What do you think on this subject?
On this subject, David, it's an unfortunate situation, but a human life should never be compromised with an animal. The zoo did the right thing.
Okay. And you, Frank, what do you think? I see your look on your face, Frank.
I'm very saddened by the. I'm very saddened by the whole situation. I don't think the farmer's child. I would have preferred to have seen another way to retract the child from that situation. I don't think we showed the responsibility that we should show, because we have captured that gorilla and taken it out of its natural residence, and then we've shot the gorilla because some kid jumped into the moat.
All right. I think we heard we got about 60 seconds left, but I wanted to do this final 60 seconds by saying that we are here at The Man's Voice, once again, very distraught over the death of Muhammad Ali. And we want to say that in our prayers for the family and friends of Muhammad Ali. I just heard that Bill Clinton will be doing the eulogy for Muhammad Ali. And I think that we might want to discuss that next time, but once again, we want to thank everyone who was listening in. There are several people I see on the line, and we want to say we appreciate you every Sunday here at 6 o'clock. Please join us again next Sunday here at The Voice, and we will begin to have more discussion. I want to thank our guest, Mr. Muhammad, who enlightened us on a lot of things that we were unaware with the Muslim world. But have a nice week, everyone. Panelists, thank you once again for being there for you. We will talk next week. We had a lot of technical issues. We were trying something new tonight, so we're sure next week we'll all be solid and good. See you next week. Thank you.
Have a good week, everyone.
You too, sir.
Have a good week, Frank, and David, and Don, and Bruce. Thank you.
Yes, sir. You did a great job. Yeah, you did. And a lot of those questions were, they were, you know, outside of what I didn't even think they were going to ask a lot of those questions, but you hung right in there. So thank you, sir. I appreciate that.
Sure. It was fun. I enjoyed it.
Well, good. Because I don't know if I would have been able to be you. Well, good. Good. All right. Well, thanks a lot, sir. Whenever, did you go to your festival?
You mean the one in town?
Yeah.
I went to some of it. I didn't go to all of it. I went to a couple of things, but yeah.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, all right, sir. I will give you a call sometime next week and check on you. Remember I told you I would bring lunch or something, so that's still open.
Okay.
All right. Take care. Thank you.
All right. Sure. Anytime.
All right. Bye-bye. Dial Don Wiggins.
You have 4 phone numbers for calling Don Wiggins. Mobile.
Hey, David.
Mr. Wiggins. You were sleeping on the job. I was like, get up.
No, I'm laying back.
I know. I'm just joking. Interesting show. But we got to work out a lot of static was coming from your mic. That's why I opened it and closed it to see where it's coming from. And I don't know why, but it was coming out of yours. I don't know why.
I didn't understand why, because I had my phone on mute. And I had my computer down as well, so I don't know where it was coming from.
Oh, you know, I might need your help.
Okay.
I am looking for I might need a letter of reference for a job, not for a no of a job, because I'm trying to move out of here and probably I'll let you know.
call me, tell me what you need so we can get it done, man.
Yeah. Okay. How are you doing down there? How's business? Are you getting up a lot of business?
I'll let you know Tuesday. I got a big meeting. I'll let you know. In fact, call me tomorrow so we can talk to some people just for a day.
Okay.
I'm going to talk with you anyway.
Okay. All right.
Okay.
Bye.